Hey, are you sick of getting schmelty and you just want to get healthy? Well, do I have news for you? You're at the right spot. Welcome to the podcast, Healthy Schmelty. This is the public health podcast, sorting through what's going on in healthcare. And you're probably thinking to yourself, wow, there can only be one thing going on in healthcare these days. And guess what? You're right. But there are some other things going on, and we'll be talking a little bit about that. And who am I? I'm a career healthcare information specialist, and I'm also a master's of public health. And I'm also your master's of ceremonies for this episode. I'm Rishi B. Thank you very much for joining me. And on this episode, we'll be sharing some health news. Talk a little bit about some non-COVID stuff. For example, Microsoft, they just put out a blog post, kind of a research article findings, if you will, through the Harvard Business Review, talking about some stats that they found about how all remote can lead to some productivity. So that's some interesting stuff. But of course, major health news is the COVID-19 pandemic. I'll be talking a little bit about how addressing the question, is a COVID vaccine being made too fast? Also be talking about some latest guidelines from the CDC, talking about who's at the highest risk of getting the sickest from COVID-19. As you know, this disease is a brand new disease, so everyone's learning about the disease in real time, unfortunately. But have the latest on some of the guidelines from the CDC. A quick note that music for this episode is from a tribute album for the recently passed Ennio Morricone. Some of you might be familiar with Ennio Morricone's work in some of the spaghetti westerns like The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, and Quentin Tarantino's films like The Hateful Eight. Let's take a listen to one song now. Okay, so that was the song Once Upon a Time in the West, and that was by both Ennio Morricone and also Bruce Springsteen. That's from a tribute album for Ennio Morricone, and that featured Bruce Springsteen, of course, and also Celine Dion and Metallica. A lot of different kinds of artists there in that album that are honoring Ennio Morricone's work. It's a really cool album, highly recommend it. You can get it on Spotify or any of the streaming services that you prefer. So much love to the memory of Ennio Morricone, who, by the way, he's been making songs for movies for so long. You know, some of those first ones that come to mind are like The Good, Bad, and the Ugly for those spaghetti westerns with Clint Eastwood. He did not get an Oscar until 2016. For The Hateful Eight, Quentin Tarantino's movie, which is just ridiculous to me. But anyways, it's time to move on to the main meat of this podcast. Let's talk about some health headlines. And in order to talk about headlines, I don't know if you were familiar with this, but every health expert who talks about headlines, they need someone to bang a gong first. Did you know that? Yeah. Isn't that crazy? They need someone to bang a gong. Yeah, that's right. I said gong. Okay, here we go. Let's talk about the health headlines. Okay, and let's move on to the first story. Work from home might be a permanent option for companies going forward. That is the title of a headline from USA Today. Let's take a listen.
Morning, team.
That's a typical morning work call for a lot of people these days. And they're not being done in offices. They're being done here. In the 1980s, less than 1% of Americans primarily worked from home. In 2017, 3% did. Today, that number is closer to 62%. And by many predictions, it's here to stay.
What we see as the future is this blended work environment where people do work remotely part of the time and they come back to the office part of the time.
Studies show people, in some ways, are actually working better at home. In a recent survey of about 3,000 global workers, respondents said that they were distracted 78 minutes a day at the office, but just 43 minutes at home.
Okay, so once again, that was a video from USA Today that's talking about how, due to the pandemic and increased distancing happening, more and more people are working remotely, and companies are pushing for working remotely. And so, like in that video, there was kind of a subjective data results where they were talking about a survey that found that of the survey respondents, most people said that they were distracted less working from home versus working in the typical corporate environment. So Microsoft, they were kind of interested in this kind of statistics as well. But what they wanted to do is kind of get away from the subjectivity and get some objective results. Look at me using my big words, subjective and objective. So they published, there was three executives from Microsoft got together and published a blog post in the Harvard Business Review talking about some of the observations they saw when the work from home was happening at first, and they hired a company. And a couple highlights of that is, on average, employees worked more than 4 hours more than what they would have in normal times per week. And they also found that multiple teams, not just the ones that you would expect, were kind of focusing and having tasks that they were focusing on to increase like customer engagement and like communication. So like something like engineers, where you may not immediately expect them to have like sales goals necessarily, or to like have like customer engagement, things of that nature. They also found, this is something that's very important to me, and I'm sure to a lot of you who find some office meetings just to be very tiring. They found that meeting times in general decreased 10% overall. So some interesting stuff there from Microsoft being a little bit open about some of the things that they're finding within their company. You can get a link to that Harvard Business Review blog post from Microsoft's executives at rishibee.com. Hey, let's move on to the next story, shall we? The coronavirus relief package talks are at a standstill amid divide over unemployment aid. This is another video from USA Today.
Central to all of this is to defeat the coronavirus. And very central to our HEROES Act is a strategic plan to do that. If we have testing, tracing, treatment, distancing, mask wearing, sanitation, and the rest, we can lower this. This is a freight train.
So we spent, I guess, about 3.5 hours with the Speaker and Senator Schumer. I think we would also characterize the discussions as the most productive we've had to date.
Okay, so those voices that we just heard, the first one was Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, and then that second voice that we heard was Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. And what they were talking about is negotiations between Republicans and Democrats over how continuing COVID-19 pandemic relief should look like. And specifically, what they're mulling over is how to, or whether to, extend Congress's CARES Act, which was signed by President Trump at the end of March 2020, and that boosted unemployment by an additional $600 per week, and also had a federal rent moratorium. That CARES Act technically ended Saturday, July 25th. And what's being negotiated now is essentially Democrats want a lot more money put towards additional COVID-19 pandemic relief, whereas Republicans, they want to have just a little bit less, but they also want to be smarter about how the money is being spent and kind of have some more rules tied to how exactly that money gets spent. And both are trying to find a deal before the Senate and Congress head off to a recess. And, you know, with everything looming and the country situation the way it is, we're like almost at 5 million cases. Deaths is not looking great, the number of deaths that we have compared to other countries. So this recess kind of sounds like a lot more important than just your average recess. I kind of hear a clock ticking in regards to this particular recess. Does that reference still stand? That was from the show 24. I hope I'm not dating myself by playing the 24 clock. But anyways, Senate Republicans, what they want is a system that's run by each state. They have a proposal that they put out at the end of July, a $1 trillion proposal. And that would tie benefits essentially to a worker's lost salary that they otherwise would have made. And they want that program run by each state. Whereas congressional Democrats, they have a $3 trillion proposal that would keep the $600 additional per week, have that going until the end of the year. And Republicans, it's a little bit more nuanced. There's some Republicans that don't want to spend any more money. There's actually still some money from the act that was passed in March. And so they kind of want to keep using that and not have any more money towards COVID-19 relief. Whereas other Republicans do want more money. They agree with Democrats, at least that far, that there should be more money. President Trump, he has been doing quite a lot of flip-flopping around this issue. But I think at this point, President Trump wants anything that's going to boost the economy. Initially, he had called for no more additional money for testing and pandemic initiatives. He instead wanted a new FBI building, a new stimulus check, and a new payroll tax cut. And he has kind of backed off to the extent that he's not pushing as hard for those. Those are kind of more wish list items. But I think at this point, the White House is willing to sign whatever the Senate and the Congress can negotiate. And the reason that President Trump, at least, is at this point of desperation is all this is happening after the U.S. Department of Labor confirmed for multiple weeks the unemployment claims heading up to almost 2 million. And for the past 2 weeks, the Department of Labor have also confirmed the highest unemployment rate since the Great Depression. And currently, we're somewhere around 15%, the unemployment rate. And once again, the U.S. Has about just under 5 million cases of COVID-19, which is the highest in the world. Second is Brazil, which is just under 3 million. Also, the U.S. fatality rate, when you take it in as a percentage of the population, is one of the top five highest in the world, even higher than India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. India has been really struggling with the disease recently, and but still, the fatality rate is lower in India than it is in America. So the White House is getting desperate, and perhaps out of that desperation, that's why President Trump signed executive orders doing the things that the Congress and Senate are negotiating as we speak. They missed the deadline that they were shooting for of the 10th, but they have delayed their recess to some degree, and it looks like that we'll be avoiding the executive orders as long as Congress and Senate can both budge and get something out the coming week, the week of August 10th. So we'll see what's going on, but it kind of feels like that clock is still ticking. Okay, the next story. Five takeaways from the vaccine hearing. So the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, they sat down with five of the companies that are producing a COVID-19 vaccine. And the Congress kind of grilled them on a number of different questions. And there's some concerns with vaccines, even if you're not necessarily an anti-vaxxer. There's some concerns with the speed that this vaccine is being produced at. And so I thought I'd share some of the takeaways that I had from this congressional hearing and some of the stuff that's come out afterwards now with these companies getting more and more in the mix and hitting daily news. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is whether or not these companies are cutting corners with this Operation Warp Speed that the FDA and the federal government has agreed with all these companies to kind of fast track a COVID-19 vaccine. It's important to note that any vaccine that's going to be distributed to the public is going to meet the standard regulations that the FDA would place on any vaccine. And at minimum, all these vaccines that these companies are working on that they want to have mass distributed, they need to be have tested on at least 30,000 people. And most of the companies confirmed that they're looking to test their vaccines with at a number of much higher than 30,000. It's also important to note that the FDA and the U.S. federal government isn't the only stakeholder involved. Any company that's going to be out of the gate making a COVID-19 vaccine is going to be looked at internationally to distribute that vaccine. So that's going to have to get approved by the FDA and also the FDA equivalents around the world. Next question, are they making the COVID-19 vaccine too fast? And what came out from the hearing is actually all of these companies, in some ways, the COVID-19 pandemic could have been a lot worse had it not been a primarily respiratory disease. And because it is, all these companies were able to leverage existing advancements in science that they had basically for the flu, but they're now using that for this COVID-19 vaccine. For example, Pfizer, they were actually in process of making a new flu vaccine, a more effective flu vaccine. They're now using that technology for this COVID-19 vaccine. So just using science for a different thing, basically. There are some advancements already in the works. So they're not necessarily making it too fast on that point. But does that mean that nothing gets lost with this speed at all? And I think if even these companies were honest, I don't think that they could 100% say no. For example, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, they're all shooting to make their vaccines for late 2020. Most of them are shooting for late 2020. And some of them are shooting for early 2021. For example, Johnson & Johnson is looking at March 2021 at the earliest. And Merck, the fifth company, they're the only one that wouldn't give a specific date. And that's because they're focusing on vaccines that would require only a single dose to get immunity in a person. AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, all of theirs would require somewhere between 2 to 3 shots before you get immunity. And with the way that the vaccine would work, is you would have to wait at least a month between doses. So, you know, that you'd still get immune if a vaccine was being publicly distributed. So that's not to say it's not effective, but it does, you know, call into question whether or not this is the most effective method or not. Is everyone going to have equal access to the COVID-19 vaccine? And basically the short answer to that is no. The wealthiest at the wealthier countries can expect to get the vaccine first. And, you know, we live in a capitalistic society for the most part in this world. So maybe that's not so much of a surprise. But it was a little disappointing. This is a question that came up at both a Senate hearing with COVID-19 experts a few months ago. And it also came up in this hearing. And no one really has a good answer for this, basically because it's a responsibility that no one really wants to be the one to take. And the companies say basically that it's up to the government to make sure that there's equitable distribution. And honestly, the best answer I heard was from this representative from Johnson & Johnson, who said that they at least had a proposal that they were going to offer to work with the government on for equitable distribution. So, you know, no socioeconomic barriers and things of that nature. And whether or not that they would work with the government on that, regardless of whether or not their vaccine had been approved, I'm not sure that that could be counted on, but they at least had an answer. And so equitable access brings to mind pricing. So you know, how expensive is this COVID-19 vaccine going to be? All companies, they're going to be selling their vaccines at a profit. At least they'll be avoiding that during pandemic as much as possible, but they're looking to sell this at a profit. And most likely what the U.S. is looking at is $4 to $20 per dose. And so $4 to $20, you know, that sounds relatively cheap. But you always have to remember that you're going to require 2 to 3 to get immunity. So, you know, healthcare access and health insurance, you know, these are all things that are issues before the COVID-19 pandemic. And so what could be a relatively cheap price for one person might not exactly be the same for a different person. And they may not even get to the door in order to be able to spend the $4 to $20 per dose. So these are all questions that I hope the government is addressing. Hopefully I shared some information that puts your mind to ease. And lastly, here's the latest on who gets the sickest from COVID-19. So the CDC and really all public health and healthcare organizations around the world, they've been studying who's getting sick from COVID-19 in order to determine whether there's any factors, demographical factors, things of that nature that determine who's going to develop a severe illness, because still 80% of people who get COVID-19 can expect to have a mild case, which, by the way, mild case still can mean nausea, could mean energy draining for multiple days. So a mild case isn't a walk in the park, but, you know, avoiding a hospital is preferable. And so the CDC has a list that they're constantly updating, and the latest updates came from the CDC on July 30th. And here's a couple highlights. I have a link to their list of all the different conditions that can lead to having a severe illness from COVID-19. Some of the highlights is, now before, you probably have heard that people who, essentially the elderly, should watch out for COVID-19 because they're the most likely to get sick. That's not necessarily the case. It's still true. But it's not necessarily, because the implication means that if you're not elderly, then you're fine. And there's now a statistical risk for a severe illness for all age groups, where there really wasn't that before. It's just that additional risk increases when you get higher in age, the highest age risk being if you're over 85. The CDC now has a list of underlying health conditions, pre-existing conditions. Some will lead to a higher risk of developing severe illness. Others are going to be, there's some chance of developing severe illness. The most notable of these conditions, there's type 2 diabetes, asthma, high blood pressure, any kind of cancer, and obesity, which is a body mass index greater than 30. There's some calculators, estimators that you can get online to estimate what your BMI is. Recommend taking a look at that if that's something of concern to you, which it was for me. I heard about that obesity thing and I was like, oh my gosh, let me check out what my BMI is. And, you know, being informed is always the best case. So some good information there. And lastly, University of Michigan wants to help kids stay active with streaming online videos to get them moving. Let's take a listen to a local news article from Fox News Detroit.
Joel said a long time ago that the more you burn, the more you learn.
Rebecca Hassan is an associate professor of kinesiology at the University of Michigan. Prior to COVID-19, they were working with schools to get kids moving more. Right now, only 1 in 4 or 5 children meets the recommended 60 minutes of physical activity every day.
K through 12 students need all the opportunities they can to be physically active, both in school and out of school.
And now kids are definitely out of school. With so much uncertainty about going back, U of M wants to help parents help their children stay active.
If kids are not engaged in sports or they don't have safe places to exercise in their neighborhoods, they can and put on a video in their living room and participate in exercise right in their house.
So that voice we heard was Rebecca Hassan, who's a professor of kinesiology at University of Michigan. She was working on a program before the pandemic about ensuring that kids at elementary schools were getting enough physical activity. And she found that in the Detroit area, 20% of kids weren't getting enough physical activity. But she's taking that work now to help kids out now who are stuck at home. And so she's putting these videos out, and she eventually wants to make more by working with PE teachers across Michigan to get some more engagement, to get some more information out there, get kids staying active, and probably also helping some of the parents stay active as well. And those videos are available for everyone publicly at University of Michigan's website. I'll have a link to that at the show notes for this episode at rishibi.com. So I'll have that link, and I'll also have links to all the articles discussed just now in these headlines at rishibi.com. And let's go back to another song from Ennio Morricone. Okay, so all the links to the articles from the health headlines, once again, can be found at rishibi.com, where also you can find some information, helpful links, at the menu item COVID-19 Help. And how are you doing during this whole pandemic situation? How's your health doing? Do you think your neighbors and your friends, family are doing enough to keep themselves safe and to keep the public at large safe? Feel free to vent at me at my email, therishibi@gmail.com. You can also find me, Rishi B, on Twitter, and post a comment on the Healthy Schmelty Facebook page, both on Twitter and at Facebook. I share regular health updates. And, this is a growing podcast. Appreciate a subscription and an iTunes review. Always looking to understand how I can do better. So I appreciate your feedback. Show notes for this episode can be found at rishibi.com, RISHIBEE.com. Thank you very much for listening, listener. And hopefully you got some good information out there. All right, let's get out of here. Thank you very much for listening. Stay healthy. Stay away from all that schmelty. Ha ha. See you later.